And welcome back to But Why the Podcast. And today we have a special interview with the creator and one of the stars of Ultra Mechatron Team Go from College Humor's Dropout, Mike Trapp. Enjoy the show.
Yeah, love to. What do you want to talk about?
So first, I noticed, or one of the reasons I was really excited when we got an email about this was just the automatic like Power Rangers vibe, because that was my stuff growing up. It is still my stuff now. And y'all's humor is so good. So what ultimately brought you to this project?
Yeah, I mean, it started from this a very Power Rangers-y kind of place, but I think the first, earliest sort of germ of the idea was in thinking about the Power Rangers as a team, and every team group project I've ever been a part of, especially one that wasn't decided by myself, where you were just sort of put together in a group from some other force, almost to as a rule, like, that group did not get along. And it seemed like it would be fun to imagine these chosen crime fighters, saviors of the world, who just happen to hate each other's guts a little bit, or at least not really gel perfectly.
Yeah.
And it also just felt like a whole genre, which, like, you know, as you mentioned, like, was a big part of. Like, I wasn't I didn't watch a whole lot of Power Rangers, but it was inescapable when I was a kid.
Yeah.
It was just everywhere. And it also wasn't something that I had seen parodied all that often. So it seemed like a fun world to dive back into.
Awesome. Yeah. So what would you say, like, kind of building out this world, right? Like, it's the very first episode opened in Japanese. And the world, as humorous and everything is, and as humorous as the set design is, it actually seems like a pretty, like, big established, like, there's lore to it, right?
There is.
How is that? What's your favorite part of that?
Yeah, I mean, I really love shows like, this has some similarities to shows like Venture Brothers and Rick and Morty and things like that, where in the sense that those are shows that kind of started from as an homage to some show, whether it's Venture Brothers with Johnny Quest or Rick and Morty with you know, Doc and Marty and Back to the Future. But each of those shows quickly moved beyond parody. You know, like, it was more than just like, we're going to take, you know, thing A and map it onto thing B. It didn't take long to develop its own lore and its own sensibility, and tell its own stories beyond just the leaping off point. And I kind of treated this the same way, as like, well, we can take the sort of the whole mecha genre, this idea of big robots that have to fight monsters in a city, which is present in many other places outside of Power Rangers.
Yeah.
Like, well, if we just take that as a sort of setting, a general leaping off point, and then use that to tell comedy, there's a lot to be mined there.
And it is one of the things that I think a lot of people immediately see, like Power Rangers and everything, but I'm also getting like old Suitamation vibes from it, which is perfect with y'all's kaiju.
Absolutely.
What, I guess, to kind of, like, help the audience kind of expand, because you're right, like, there's that kernel of it, but there is so much more of the mecha genre out there. What else did you all look to when kind of crafting and creating this?
Yeah, I mean, I was pulling, there's also a fair amount of, like, sort of Pacific Rim being pulled into here. There's a little bit of Godzilla. There's some Voltron. I'm not as well versed in the mecha genre as I would like to be, and this project got written pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But I did end up doing a couple deep Wikipedia dives through a few things like Stephen Thomas and Jared Logan and things like that, just to sort of get a little bit of a handle of like what's been covered, what sort of tropes pop up again and again, and
and I can tell you, it. I had a lot of fun as a viewer. A lot
Thank
of
you.
fun. I actually think my favorite episode is, I don't remember her name, but it's where she's trying to be really, really good at partying, and so she forgets why she was partying in the first place, and she's like driving the mech like drunk, and I'm like, oh my god, this is so good.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that's episode 2 that was written by Jessica Ross, and yeah, the nice thing about imagining, you know, we draw a lot of comedy from this notion that each part of the Ultra Mechatron is piloted by a different person, which, thinking about that for more than 10 seconds, you realize all the problems that you could run into with that system. But then that also means that, like, we can sort of build stories around that. It's like, well, what is a story for the legs? which sounds like a crazy thing to think, because legs are not a character. But obviously the person controlling the legs is. And if this is their responsibility, then also, like, what is that kind of person? You know, when I was first conceptualizing the thing, I imagined the legs as being this sort of, you know, put upon workhorse a little bit, like the person in the group project who does 90% of the work but doesn't get any of the credit or gets an equal amount of credit, because like they're like, you're moving around a lot, but you're not doing the big flashy punches, but you're perhaps the most important part of the team. And what happens when that person who is this sort of studious nerd who's been working so hard decides to let loose, and you lose that person? You know, you get some fun character explorations there, but you also get to see the silliness of a drunk giant mech stumbling
through the city. So, talking about like the other characters, is they each have their own area, like you said, that they control. They all kind of, they live in the tropes, like the trope that they embody is there. And then each person, you know, y'all bring out like different pieces of it, to make it different and not, too reliant while you still know what you're going for. So why don't you talk a little bit about the different characters that, you know, that you've created to kind of fit into, this mecha world and, you know, control the different pieces.
Sure. Yeah. So the Ultra Mechatron team is composed of four different pilots. Sarah controls the head, and she's your sort of tactical leader. Armand controls the arms and is your fighter, sort of retired military guy, gets pulled in there. Trish controls the legs. We talked about her just a moment ago. As sort of very smart, intelligent, but you know, does a lot of work. Maybe isn't always appreciated. And Brody controls the torso and does basically nothing. because the torso doesn't move at all. It has very little function. That sort of character game was one of the earliest things we settled on. This notion that, like, if you did have someone, the torso is a huge space that someone should probably be sitting in, but it doesn't do much for you tactically, as having someone in charge of the torso is also true of a lot of group projects, where there is someone who doesn't always pull their weight, and they're still a part of the team because they were put in your group, but and you have to deal with them, but they may not always be contributing equally.
So I do have to say Brody is one of my favorites.
Well, thank you very much. he's very, it's very fun to play him, because I really enjoy playing big dumb idiots, basically, for lack of a better word. I spend a lot of my time here. I manage a lot of the writers here, so I have to spend a lot of time with my manager hat on and being responsible and trying to approach decisions as smart as I possibly can. So getting the opportunity to play an annoying idiot is kind of a breath of fresh air.
So how do you get into character from being somebody who like does project management and managing people to just like letting it loose and being like, yeah, I can put that all aside for a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, it's honestly kind of nice. It's sort of like slipping into a bath, because you know, a lot of times I at least like long to be able to say, like, does this have to be my problem? Do I have to deal with this? And, you know, it's harder to put on the big boy pants. So to get permission to be like, you know, just let loose is nice. And the nice thing about this shoot, too, is you know, when we were shooting the cockpit scenes, we were all in the same room together, each with our own camera on us. So, and we're all, you know, we all have improv backgrounds. So, you know, we just sort of, you sort of slip into character and you let the improv fly, and everything that we, you know, there's certainly a fair amount of improvised material in here that was, you know, because we had cameras on everyone, we got coverage for all sides. So everything was usable, and any joke that happened to pop up on set was like, well, if it's good, it's good enough, it'll make the final cut.
What's one of your favorite improv jokes from that section?
That's a really good question. Gosh, I'm going to have to think for a second, because I've been reviewing these, all these episodes have sort of run together, and you sometimes forget what was written and what was scripted. A lot of the, there's a running joke throughout the series that, in a sort of Pacific Rim kind of way, Trish has a very like horrific backstory of her parents dying at a young age, and we never fully get the full story there. And in the scripts, there were like one or two references to this backstory that always gets cut off, and we don't hear exactly what it is. But Katie Maravich, who plays Trish, was just delighted by this joke, and in a lot of these improv sessions that would usually just be kind of like the tail end of the scripted stuff, we just keep going and see what we ran into.
Yeah.
She would try to sneak in another reference to her dead parents wherever she could. not all of them made it in, but there's certainly like one or two that that put their way back in there.
That's awesome. And it's actually really cool to hear that, because that was one of the things I picked up on, and I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, this is... How do you say it? It was playing in, like, the toy box of all of, like, the sad backstories, and in like, a very good way that, like, I wasn't ever going to get it, and that was what made it great, because, like, I think, like, a lot of mecha, especially in, like, Pacific Rim, it is just all about that all the time.
I feel like it's true a little bit of, like, Evangelion, too.
Yeah.
Like, this sort of, like, you know, like, I think when you're dealing with these stories that are not comedies of giant monsters invading a city, it's a lot of stories about helplessness and powerlessness and dealing with tragedy and grief. And I feel like the genre likes to play a lot with, like, you know, what can one small person do against an unstoppable force? And to be able to, like, wrap that into our world where, like, there is this person. But also, if, you know, if this group doesn't really get along, it's like, well, that's kind of a bummer. We don't want to hear about that.
Could you not bring up your dead parents again?
Yeah, like, you're always bringing it up. Let's just, like, we're having a nice time, and then you start bringing this up. Or if nothing else, just a pure blinders, like not even being sensitive to the condition that someone else might be in, so wrapped up in their own selfish world.
So one of the other things I have to ask is, how did you all come up with the kaijus? Like, there are so many, and they are so different and so hilarious. I think I don't remember what it was, the one that's in the fishnets and, like, the bikini.
Hot potato?
Yes, hot potato. That was my favorite.
Coming up with was so fun. So the project initially started as, like, a short web series, just like four episodes, as something we were trying out last year. And so part of that for me was, like, as I was constructing them, building up these episodes, I knew that we probably wouldn't see a whole lot of the fighting, but I wanted to make these the kaiju memorable. And as a comedy, it was like, well, let's just make them kind of punny. This kind of also something like Powerpuff Girls does too. Like, it pops up at a couple places to, like, have these almost like living puns, which delights me, because I'm a sort of an unabashed defender of puns, but also to have that juxtaposition of these, like, horrifying, giant, frightening monsters who also have the stupidest names. My favorite from the original web series was Jorthog. It was just a giant warthog pairing cut off jorts.
Oh my god!
It's a stupid name, but it kind of sticks in your head. And the visual of, you know, a Daisy Duke wearing warthog kind of sticks with you.
Yep.
And one of the first things we did when we started writing the main series with myself and the other writers was to sort of like get kind of wade into the world gently and kind of get everyone on the same page of the level of silliness that we're at. It's like, let's just come up with a big list of monsters. No idea is too stupid. It was sort of the overriding philosophy for the show. Let's just come up with as many as we can. They're all... I don't want to give any spoilers, but for you know, things that have already been featured in the show, we have Stunt Manatee, which is like an evil Knievel kind of manatee. A lot of animal-based puns, but then we also have things like the Ubermensch, which is another mech composed of ride-sharing cars, Pamplemousse, which is a mousse that is also part grapefruit and very French. So it's extremely silly, but there's something very refreshing to me about being unapologetically silly.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that, like, I definitely appreciated watching it, because, like, there's, how do I say it? Pacific Rim also had very on-the-nose names for their monsters. They were just not in suits. Sure. So, like,
also
getting...
Also, for the people, I mean, like, Stacker Pentecost is not a real name. You
right?
Know? Like, that is a name that is designed to evoke a feeling.
Exactly. I fell in love with the puns that I got to see on screen. I'm not sure how many are out right now. I saw the first six, but Hot Potato very much resonated in my soul. I would love to cosplay her at some point.
I would love to see that.
That is just... go ahead.
It's funny with stuff like that. I know that our... all those kaiju costumes were all designed by Chloe Badner, who did an excellent job with everything. I know that, you know, you have to have, you write something on paper sometimes, again, Jessica Ross wrote that particular episode, and it was like, okay, Hot Potato, this seems very fun and silly. And then it comes time to actually make the costume. Like, well, how exactly does one make a potato hot? I know there are conversations between our director and Chloe with, like, well, okay, what is the wardrobe? How exactly are we imagining this potato? Those are the kinds of silly design questions you don't always think about when you're writing.
Yeah. I think we have time for one more question, and I want to ask you, what went into making the mech? Because we've talked about the kaiju, so what about the Ultra Mechatron?
The design actually of the Ultra Mechatron changed a little bit between the web series and the current series. Part of that is because, I want to make sure I'm not saying anything wrong, but I think this is right. So we had, when we shot the original web series, we had recently wrapped on another show that we were shooting here called Troopers, which was sort of imagining like the life of a lowly stormtrooper-like person in a galactic evil Star Wars-like empire. And we had a couple of like leftover spaceshipy looking sets and some spacey looking armor. So I think the initial design, we modified some existing costume to make something just slightly different. and that was a good like stopgap for when we were just sort of like, oh, let's get this thing on its feet, let's get it off the ground, let's use these costumes and sets before they go into storage. But then when it came time to do the fuller series, it gave us a chance to reinvestigate and look at how exactly we want this thing to look. It's, you know, obviously it has to be, I guess I never explicitly say this for anyone who hasn't seen it yet, all the fight scenes take place in this sort of, pseudonation kind of style, but in a cute kind of cardboard city. Everything's very clearly, like, handmade. Which is nice because it gives us a little bit of a wiggle room to play around with verisimilitude. Like, we don't need to look exactly like a working robot. It kind of just needs to evoke a robot.
Yeah.
Like making sure that we had things that could sort of represent each character, you know, a cool looking helmet, some cool gloves, cool boots. And then beyond that, there was sort of this general idea that, like, the Ultra Mechatron's powers are not fully defined. In any given episode, we can introduce some new thing that might be in there, whether it's laser eyes or a propeller that comes out the head or nipple missiles or any number of other things. We let the writing define what powers we wanted to have, and then kind of just shove that to our producer. Like, can you figure out how to do this?
Awesome. Well, this has been great talking to you. Why don't you tell everybody listening where they can watch the show and where they can, you know, find it and you on the internet?
Yeah. You can watch episodes of Ultra Mechatron Team Go on dropout.tv. New episodes go up on every Thursday, technically midnight. On midnight Pacific time, between Wednesday and Thursday, depending on what time zone you're in. Thursdays here. We're currently, I think we just put up episode 5 of 11, so about halfway through the series. If you want to hear more from me, you can, I tweet at Mike W. Trapp. You can also find me on Instagram there, but it's mostly just cat and hiking pictures. So if that's more your jam, you can totally go there. But more of my news and jokes and things like that to go on Twitter.
I mean, cat and hiking is a good Instagram profile.
Yeah, I mean, look, I know what people are after on Instagram.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Mike.
Thank you for talking with me.
Yeah, thank you.